The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
So I'm still stuck on how bizarre this Paula White's statement is. You know, look, I get she's, you know, Trump's spiritual advisor, and I'm, you know, there's not a lot to that. And he's not going to, you know, hold her to any real record of actually knowing what she's talking about spiritually. But this whole idea that, you know, had Jesus broken the law and been an illegal, you know, refugee and illegal immigrant, he wouldn't have been the Messiah. It's just really twisted and bizarre to me, because he would never break the law. Wow. Crazy. There are times that I look at people like this, and I got to think that religion is a mental disorder when people take it to this kind of just bizarre extreme. Anyway, to help me maybe work through some of that, I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for making time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
You know, I look at this, and I don't know if you saw this story about this Paula White and how crazy this is. I mean, people who would listen to this woman,
yeah,
and people who would give her money, and there are people who give her tons of money, there's got to be some help for them somewhere. Because I gotta be honest. I think it's a mental disorder.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for starters, I think that we in some ways kind of misspeak when we say that they are sort of, I guess, using their religion, because ultimately what they're doing is they're using their own personal bigotries. And then the religion itself is like a justification for those bigotries. So a lot of times what you'll see is them just basically morphing Jesus into this, like, Republican white Jesus figure, sort of like Santa Claus, and how they raised holy hell about, you know, Santa Claus is a white man. Because they have, you know, created this image, I think, of both of those figures, actually, of Santa Claus and Jesus, where he actually resembles them, yeah. That he is created in their image, actually.
Yeah, I almost got into a fist fight once with an evangelical guy, about I guess it'd been about 15 years ago. A guy really, he was going to come after me because I said Jesus probably looked a lot like Yasser Arafat.
Yeah.
Which sent him just into a fit of rage. I said, you know, big nose and everything. And, and you know, because I was trying to goad this guy into some kind of a discussion, and he was having none of it. No, Jesus was blonde hair and blue eyes. I go, he's an Aryan Jesus. And yeah, that was his belief.
Yeah, they totally ignore the hair like lamb's wool part. I mean, you know, if they're not necessarily, you know, strict Bible believers either, because right. They're not actually taking the word for what it says. But again, I think that they want this exalted figure to resemble themselves. And so you'll see them make all sorts of justifications for, you know, back when the idea of interracial marriage was coming up before the Supreme Court, you know, that was a time when they firmly believed that their religion dictated that people of different ethnicities shouldn't mix. And they will use that book, they will use those words to basically be a justification of their own internal bigotries. Whether or not that's actually, you know, in the word itself, clearly, that's not what it's explicitly saying. Otherwise, you wouldn't have people of color. You know, I'm a black Texan, a Southern Baptist. So you wouldn't have people of color on the other side embracing the same religion, but then also none of the bigotry that they're adding to it.
Isn't it twisted that you can have the same book and everybody seemed to agree on the books, and yet you read completely different things in them?
I mean, but that's the thing about it, right? I mean, man is man, and man is always going to interpret words, however he, you know, sort of chooses to. And this is how we can have the same story come out in the news, but Fox News sort of flips it into this one viewpoint while everyone else is saying it a different way. And the people that are receiving that message, if that's a message that resonates with them and confirms and affirms their belief system, then they go with it, whether it's factual or not.
Yeah, but, you know, going back to the lamb's wool thing, you know, I grew up in the city. I've actually never, I don't think I've ever touched lamb's wool.
Yeah.
So it could be just like mine, for all I know. Could be, you know, only different.
Yeah, but I think, you know, in particular, I think in the black church, I think hair like lamb's wool is something that that black people in particular very much see as a nod to this was a person of color. This was, like you said, I mean, this is somebody that probably looked like Arafat. I mean, this is somebody that probably looked like Drake, the rapper Drake. I mean, you know, and, you know, he's of Jewish and African-American ancestry. So he could have looked all sorts of ways. But I think that the idea that in this country, that there's such a large swath of people that have ultimately decided that this individual had blonde hair and blue eyes and, you know, looks like this, you know, what the Republican Party holds up as their standard for religiosity, that, you know, that's where we are. I mean, there are people who are actually doing that.
Yeah, but what do you have to say to the person who goes, who makes this idiotic argument that, you know, Jesus wouldn't have come here illegally?
I mean, Jesus hung out with the prostitutes and the winos.
Exactly.
I mean, that's who he spent most of his time with, actually. And so I think this idea, again, of law, that law is man-made, and it's not necessarily something that you can actually put forth without, you know, imbuing your own worldview and your own personal prejudice and bigotry onto that law. And so what law are they even speaking to? The idea of borders and you know, what is illegal and what's not in terms of seeking asylum, when did that become illegal?
Let's see. That would have been November of 2016.
Yeah, I mean, fleeing for your own safety, I mean, when did that become illegal, honestly? But again, they have twisted it so to the point where they think they can just call it a law. And then anyone who has, quote unquote, broken that law is morally, you know, unjust in their eyes and deserves whatever dehumanization and criminalization and brutalization that these people are getting.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable at what they can justify and
right.
What we've justified throughout history in the name of religion and mm-hmm. My God's bigger than your God.
And I think that, you know, I always think back to if you just, like in slavery times, I mean, most of the slaves, when they were sneaking to learn to read, they were reading the Bible. And what they chose to do with the words that they, you know, read in that book was to give them the strength to endure bondage. And, you know, the civil rights movement very much sprung up in the black church. The idea of liberation and Moses bringing these, you know, people who were enslaved out of bondage, that, you know, they call it black liberation theology. But that's a very salient point of, you know, what Barack Obama, you know, kind of unveiled to the world in his amazing eulogy that he did after the Charleston shooting. That the take on that book was very different in the minds of the people who were enslaved and the people who were enslaving them. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
So how did it change from that to the prosperity gospel and Creflo Dollar needing a $60 million jet?
Oh, I mean, greed, obviously. I mean, that's the root of all evil, right? I think that aspect is evident across the board. And certainly, you know, that's not everybody. I mean, you know, there are plenty of examples of churches that don't do that. And certainly the ones that, you know, are making all this money and are flying in on jets and taking collections for jet fuel, because there's actually a pastor in Houston that does that.
Well, you've got the crazy guy down your way, the not crazy, I truly believe is the Antichrist.
Olstein.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, all he needed to do for me was just, you know, not let the evacuees from the Hurricane Harvey into the church.
Well, but those people might come in and see. They might see something.
They might break the law, quote unquote.
Yeah, or they might be casing the joint. Because did you see when he got ripped off? And I still think that was an inside job. It was something like $600,000.
Yeah, I think it was an inside job too.
Of you know, money that people dropped into buckets. That wasn't credit cards. That wasn't the tithing that comes automatically from your savings or your 401k.
Yeah.
I mean, these charlatan churches, man. You know, these mega churches. They're deep into your pockets.
They're deep into your pockets, and they're also deep into your politics. I mean, you know, the more and more I just kind of sit back and digest this Supreme Court situation and the very real prospect that Roe will be overturned, you know, this is all a war that is in many ways being waged in church on Sunday.
Yep. Well, do you remember when Alito was being confirmed?
Yeah.
They had Justice Sunday. Where they had like 1,000 churches linked up, and they were doing these huge events to get him pushed through, because this is God's candidate, and you know, all of these really crazy right wing churches were like this militant army that they wanted to be for years. It was at the time I was scared, less.
Yeah. I mean, but this is there. And being a Texan, I've had conversations in particular with, I just sort of will never get over, how Wendy Davis lost, the governorship, but also just how she lost the white vote, and in particular, the white woman vote. And for a lot of those white women who identify as evangelicals, the singular issue for them, is abortion.
Right.
And they will, you know, dismiss everything else, you know. I mean, their health care, their everything else goes out the window in terms of, you know, their political agenda and what they see in terms of bread and butter issues in their house just because of the issue of abortion.
No, I actually know some of those people, and
it's
really kind of scary. So let me ask you, if Roe goes by the wayside, which I think everybody assumes that it will within the next 2 years, if Kavanaugh is put on the court, does this then free those voters up to maybe look up and go, oh, gee, you know, all of the brainwashing, all of the, you know, all of the propaganda is now gone. I'm going to look to something else.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that they will continue to, because the thing is that the issue isn't going to go away simply because the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade.
Right, we'll be able to at least punish those people by seeing them die in back alleys.
Yeah, and then America's going to have to decide again, is this what we're devolving to? And I think, you know, when you just think about health care, I can't even imagine the magnitude of just the medical atrocity. Not even just in terms of like the imaginary, you know, person who's seeking an abortion that most people have in their mind. Because I think most people think of this person like, oh, this is like some college girl that's just out, you know, drinking and doing whatever and making bad choices, and she's the one who's out there trying to get an abortion. I think that's who people, you know, are thinking about and who they like want to punish and want to teach her how to learn a lesson,
right.
You know. But when in reality, so many of the women who receive abortions in this country are women who already have children, who are married, maybe, and already have families that are the correct number of children that they set out, you know, to plan for their family. They only wanted to have 2 kids. And so ultimately they don't want to have a third child. Or, you know, because of, you know, the circumstances of her, you know, two pregnancies, or maybe she has some type of medical condition that makes it really, you know, not a good decision to follow through with a full-term pregnancy, that's a decision that she's making to terminate that pregnancy.
Right.
And so just totally discounting the reality of the situation, that this is a medically necessary procedure for a lot of women. And this community solely thinks about, you know, they're saving a life and they're bringing somebody to life, et cetera, et cetera. But they don't necessarily think about how high the maternity mortality rate is in this country, and in particular in a lot of red states.
Yeah, they don't care. I mean, that
they don't care.
No, I mean, at the end of it, and I've had these conversations with you know, people who tell you about, oh, we just want the baby born, and I go, okay, well, let's raise your taxes so that we can make sure that they get, you know, the prenatal care that they need, and the education and the
WIC and the Medicaid
everything.
And the Obamacare, et cetera, that they cut every day, basically.
Right, and what happens is, well, no, we don't want that. Well, who's going to take care of these kids? If these women can't, if these families can't, who then? And then what happens to these kids? And, well, that's not our problem.
Well, and what are you doing about the kids that are in cages that have been separated from their families?
Well, they're not really kids. You know, they're just kind of sub. You know, they're not Americans. We don't care about them. They're lower. So
I mean, the hypocrisy is just everywhere you turn. And even more so, you know, just to tie this whole, like, you know what storm into a bow, with the religion angle and also just this, like, weird kidnapping of children that they're doing. And you have Betsy DeVos and these, like, religious adoption agencies in Michigan that are basically taking in these children and then, you know, giving them to people
who are white evangelicals.
That are going to, you know, raise these children, you know, presumably as white children, as passing for white children. So there's an element even of, like, ethnic cleansing that's happening to some extent. And I think that it's fueled by, like, hypocritical people, number one, but it's also fueled by people who have this religious bent. And it just doesn't. It's not even internally consistent.
No, I'm with you. I mean, it's not. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's remarkable to me that people even listen to these folks and are duped by it. But here's the thing. This is nowhere near the conversation I wanted to have. It's just where we went. I wanted to talk about how crazy Trump was today in his little thing. And I wanted to get your thought on the outburst at the breakfast table. And then the really bizarre kind of, oh, hey, things are great. We got a great relationship later on with Merkel sitting next to him. Did I miss something?
I mean, honestly, my reaction at this point is all I can say is Instability in Chief. All I can do is refer people to Instability in Chief, Daily Coast, circa December 2016. And this man, he is mentally, emotionally, cognitively unstable. And so nothing he does surprises me. Everything he does that appears unstable seems consistent with the fact that he's been nothing but unstable the entire time he's been in the public eye, and definitely the entire time he's been the fake president of the United States. So the fact that he's still, I was amazed that he was even allowed to be, you know, sworn in. No, seriously. Every day that the 25th Amendment has not been seriously considered is appalling to me. I mean, as a clinician, this is someone who, if he showed up in my emergency room, I would be asked to do something with this man.
Right, but here's the thing. Here's the reality. He's doing everything the moneyed interests want. He's packing the courts with crazy people. He's giving massive amounts of tax cuts to the very wealthy, running up our national debt, creating the crisis down the road that will eventually be the end of Social Security and Medicare. He's doing everything the extreme conservatives want. So until he starts turning that corner, and until he starts turning against them, he's aces.
Right. And the reason why is because of everything else we discussed prior to you just saying that. Because ultimately, they do not care how much of a just lunatic this man is, because ultimately their stated goal in terms of instituting their religious, their theocracy, basically, their Sharia law,
yep,
in America, the American Taliban, that is being brought to fruition. They're bringing back Jim Crow. You know, they're reversing affirmative action. They're doing everything that these people religiously believe to be the right thing to do. And they feel like they have the word of God literally supporting them in this. And so it does not matter if Trump goes up there and says whatever, does whatever, looks like whatever. They are going to continue to back this man because ultimately he is the means to an end.
No,
and they don't care. They don't care about anything else.
No, you heard that from evangelicals in 2016, and you hear it every time we find out about Grab Her by the You Know What or Stormy Daniels or any of the, you know, any of the stuff, you know, the Jeffrey Epstein stuff, any of that stuff. It's all of, you know, God sent him to us to put this guy on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, they believe this. They believe, and again, Paula White, this is how they justify that, right? I mean, in their mind, he hasn't broken any laws, even though he's broken like so many laws. But by their rule book, that's a completely different rule book for them versus everyone else, you know, he's pure as the driven snow.
Scary, scary, scary stuff. So I want to get your thought on the photo. It seems like every time, you know, they get together, there's a bizarre photo. Is this Germany's doing? I mean, you know, the Merkel photo was kind of funny. This one today of him look, everybody else looking one way and him going, oh, what's that over there? Squirrel? I don't know. Butterflies? I don't know. Thoughts?
He's a sociopath. You know what? You just give me these layups, Rick. He's a sociopath. I mean, this is what he's supposed to be doing. He is supposed to be going the complete opposite direction of where everyone else is going, is because his entire existence is meant to be contrary. It is meant to be obstinate. It's meant to be defiant. Shout out to Carol. She mentioned that to me during the break. But it's absolutely true. There's a disorder for adolescents and children called obstinate defiant disorder. And basically the root of that disorder is being, you know, obstinate, refusing to go the way that, you know, everyone is going. But when everyone is going, you know, the socially accepted way, actually, not following rules, not respecting authority. And so Trump, though he's a 70, I guess, 2-year-old man at this point, he still has that mind of that obstinate, defiant, you know, child, actually. And so he is going to do that on purpose simply because he's so narcissistically driven that he has to set his own path. He has to do something different.
No, it's going to be an interesting couple of days. And look, the base, as I woke up today, the first thing I saw was CNN reporting, you know, Trump comes out swinging. And I'm going, why do you write that? This is just feeding the troll class. Don't do that. And then you saw John Kelly. Did you see the little bit of Trump, you know, doing his little do-to-do and John Kelly writhing in pain, evidently because there was no breakfast?
Why won't he just resign?
I don't know why. That's one of those questions that I've got. Maybe he's got, I'm not even going there.
Is he being blackmailed? I mean, what's going on here? Because, I mean, he just looks so miserable.
He does.
I mean, I don't feel sorry for him because he totally signed up for this. But, I mean, he just looks like, oh, my gosh, just somebody get me out of here. I'd rather be anywhere but here.
So not buying the breakfast argument?
No, I'm not buying that. I mean, he was the one that was facepalming. Like, you know, there was the image of all these images of him are him being exasperated. And who wouldn't be? in that position. I mean, it's realistic. I think it's an accurate portrayal of what is actually going on for this man. And then afterwards, they sort of have to give these really harebrained excuses for what was going on. But it's all just a sham. Yeah, he needs to resign.
I'm with you, but I still liked watching the torture.
But this is not good for him. This is everybody who works there looks terrible.
Of course, like, they are, because if you read reports, the reports that you see, he treats everybody terrible, and they all know at one point or another, their number is going to come up to be thrown under the bus. I don't know why anybody works there.
I mean, it's the most miserable existence. And again, like I said, you really can't even take pity on them or feel sorry for them, because, like I always say, deplorable is a choice. And it ages you, and it sickens you on the inside. You can't, I mean, to keep up this level of lying and covering up and, you know, chasing after him and trying to calm him down and just everything that they're really having to do, for this 72-year-old man baby. It's very sad. I mean, yep. That's all I can say. It's sad.
I can't wait for pictures of the blimp when they get to the UK. That's all I got to say. Jane, I appreciate the time. It's always great having you on. Always a blast.
You too. Have a great week.
You too. Our good friend Propane Jane. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.